You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, July 18th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, John Nichols of The Nation magazine on their expose series on ALEC. Basically where all those nefarious state laws come from that you see in places like Michigan and Florida, Ohio, Wisconsin. You didn't think that Scott Walker thought these things up on his own, did you? Also joining us, Julie Underwood, Dean of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Education, also wrote a piece on this big ALEC document dump that was put out by the Center for Media and Democracy. We'll be talking to Nichols in just a moment. More on the debt ceiling today as the... we had a deal that McConnell had offered the president, which was basically, you take responsibility for raising the debt, and we'll pretend like we weren't involved in it, and there'll be no cuts. And, well, President Obama said, no, my real agenda is to cut. So I'm going to tell Harry Reid to make a deal with you that says we will have cuts. $1.5 trillion worth of cuts over 10 years. We'll have no increase in revenue, despite the fact that the deficit is the most important thing we could possibly deal with now, as opposed to, say, something like jobs, infrastructure investment in general. We'll also set up a commission of 12 congresspeople who can fast-track any other cuts. We'll set up a system where you cannot filibuster their legislation, where you only need 50% majority, just like we do with base closings. We will guarantee austerity. That's the big one on the table. It remains to be seen if they will hammer this out and whether or not Democratic congresspeople will vote for it. We shall see. More on the massive scandal in Britain. I don't know how many people. We have multiple resignations throughout the News Corp world, including Les Hinton, the guy who was head of the Wall Street Journal and the Dow. Rebecca Brooks from News of the World. We have a resignation out of Scotland Yard. Apparently, somebody who sat on some evidence or just wanted to get out of the way, didn't want to create any more problem. We will dig into that story as the days go on. And new video just released just moments ago by Project Veritas. Apparently, and folks, this is breaking. If you go into a government agency that has nothing to do with law enforcement and tell them that you are Russian and have a sports car and may deal drugs, they will not arrest you. That's the big expose. And I know this is true because I called the Department of Public Works the other day and I said, hello, I am from a foreign country. I am a prostitute. I am selling my body and there's a pothole on my street. And all they cared about was the pothole. More on this as the show continues. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to John Nichols of The Nation on this big document dump from ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. Finally, a chance to see where all this decrepitness comes from. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. John Nichols of The Nation magazine, among other things, to tell us about this this joint project. 800 documents, basically models of suggested legislation developed by the American Legislative Exchange Council have been released, and The Nation magazine is digging into this stuff. Welcome to the program, John.
It's great to be with you, Sam.
So, John, give us an overview. What is ALEC?
Well, ALEC is probably best understood as the Losers Club. It's all the people who back in the 1960s and 1970s kind of were on the wrong side of every fight. They wanted to elect Barry Goldwater president. They thought Richard Nixon was going to deliver for them. They love Spiro Agnew, and they kept losing. Civil rights passed, Medicare, Medicaid, public employee unions expanded. Everything went wrong for them. So in 1973, they got together and they came up with a plan to secretly put state legislators together with corporate lobbyists, kind of move the money behind closed doors, move the legislation, go down into the states and nurture up a new generation of pay-to-play politicians and conservative leaders who are going to really deliver for them. And they nurtured up, if you can, this is ALEC alumni here, my friend, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Scott Walker, John Kasich. You getting the picture here?
Yeah.
All of these are folks who came out of this very secretive organization that put together conservative legislators with the most powerful corporate lobbyists and conservative foundations funded by folks like the Koch brothers. And they've been around for almost 40 years, getting ready. They had their favorite quote. It's one from Alan Greenspan. I'm sorry, I'm taking the wrong bad player. I was going to say Alan Greenspan. It's actually Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman said, the purpose of conservative think tanks is to wait around until a crisis comes along. And when that crisis comes along, have model legislation prepared so that you can quickly move it through the states and up toward the federal government and win all the fights that you wouldn't win without the crisis. That's their vision. Well, the economic downturn of 2008, the Republican sweep of state houses in 2010, created the opening that the ALEC folks have really been looking for the better part of four decades. And they moved immediately in states across the country to pass radical new laws that take away labor rights, that take away consumer protection, that take away environmental protection, that take away regulations on corporations, that ultimately disempower all of the civil society groups that would challenge the right-wing agenda, labor unions, trial lawyers, etc. And, this is the capper on it, model legislation to make it harder for tens of millions of Americans to vote. The model voter ID legislation comes from ALEC and was, at the start of this year, sponsored in more than 30 states across the country by ALEC-tied legislators.
So when people say this is amazing that you've got guys like Scott Walker and Rick Scott and Kasich and you see Michigan and Indiana and all these states introducing similar types of legislation, this is no accident. This is not one of them following the lead of the others. They're all basically getting this stuff via ALEC.
That's exactly right. And they not only are getting model legislation, and the wonderful thing about this expose, alecexposed.org, that the Center for Media and Democracy has put up, great people over there, stuff that The Nation has done, is it's already being picked up by major media across the country. And as soon as they start to look at these, at the legislation that's been passed in their states and compare it to the ALEC model legislation, to the ALEC resolutions, they're like, oh my God, look at this. The LA Times went wild with this on picking up this stuff and looking at what's been done with environmental laws. The paper in Knoxville, Tennessee, just compared a whole bunch of their new laws in Tennessee, things passed this year with the ALEC model legislation, found whole sections that they didn't even change. They didn't even, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you send away for the exam answers online, right?
Uh-huh.
You get them, you know, they ship them over to you. At least, you know, the smart student at least changes a few words. These legislators sometimes didn't even change words in full sections of things that they put in. Now, what's really troubling about this, Sam, is that these model bills weren't written by sincere conservative ideologues or Republicans who really believe in things. They were written in consultation with, and by any measure, guided by, corporate lobbyists, corporate representatives, who really are the powerful players in ALEC. To get, for a legislator to join ALEC, you have to pay $50. For a corporation, the fee is between $7,000 and $21,000. Now, that's like ladies' night at the bar, right? You let ladies in free, so that, but the guys gotta pay? Well, this is what's happening. The legislators are the ladies, right? You put the legislators in the room, and all the corporate folks come in, and they sit down and say, this is what we'd really, really like you to pass. Now, to give you a sense of just how powerful this situation is, the person who runs the ALEC Task Force on elections and election law, how we run our democracy, is a former staffer of the Koch brothers, the Koch family foundation, right? She's in there, and you look at organization after organization, section after section within ALEC, it's always somebody who's deeply, passionately interested, not purely for ideological reasons, but also for their own self-interest.
Well, I mean, this sounds like a great money-making venture. If you... And now it's paid off for them. The other thing that strikes me, I mean, obviously, you could look at anything that Scott Walker has passed. You could look at anything that Rick Scott has passed, and you could see the enormous benefits that corporate interests gain from these type of legislation. You can see, but the idea that this has all been written that this has been developed over 30, 40 years, that it all comes from a fundamentally ideological, and maybe that's even being too kind, because in some ways there is no ideology other than just sort of like corporatism here. But it has nothing to do with the situation these states find themselves in. It is completely divorced from the reality on the ground. It is simply, this is, any crisis you're going through is simply an excuse. This is not to address the problems that you're dealing with on a state government level. This is simply to take advantage of those problems.
Sam, that is such a smart insight. And you ought to put an underline underneath it and circle that one, because it's so very important, and it takes us, you know, a step further into this dialogue, because that's exactly right. These pieces of model legislation were often written or at least outlined before the current debt crisis, before the current economic crisis, much of which I happen to believe is inflated, but before any of these things came into play. And so you're right, this is sort of a one-size-fits-all, quote-unquote, solution for all of the, quote-unquote, problems being faced by the states. The trouble with it is the problems that our states are facing. Remember, state and local government is the primary delivery vehicle for our services, for public education, for so much of what we come into contact with in our daily lives. Most of what we know of government is not the federal government, it's the state and local government. And so these folks, these corporations, have wanted to change how state and local government operates for a very long time. They want lower taxes, less regulation, less environmental oversight, and frankly, less small-d democratic participation. They don't want high turnout elections. They don't want citizen-sponsored initiatives for a living wage or for some expansion of health benefits or something like that. So they want a very controlled, very constrained state government that serves their purposes but doesn't serve small-d democratic purposes. And some of their fixes are absolutely antithetical to the moment that we are in. For instance, these guys are huge backers of free trade, you know, unrestricted, corporate-sponsored free trade. The problem is many of our states are suffering horribly as a result of deindustrialization and the downsizing of their industries because of free trade. So the notion that you're solution, quote-unquote, to an economic downturn is to borrow some page from Alec. It's a little bit like, you know, if you're suffering from blood loss and you go to a vampire, you know, you're not going to get better in that circumstance.
So the nation has broken down into five different sections, these documents. I presume there'll be even more, but you focus on rigging elections. Now, one would, just the idea that strategies on disenfranchising voters would be part of suggestions for legislation is pretty stunning. Tell me some of the most egregious legislation that comes out of or suggestions for legislation that have come out in terms of actually diminishing turnout.
Absolutely. The model voter ID legislation that comes out from ALEC is all about making it tougher for people to vote, forcing them to provide photo IDs, to provide proof of citizenship. And remember, ALEC actually helped to write the Arizona immigration law. The guy who was the sponsor of the Arizona immigration law sits on ALEC's election task force. Now you ask yourself, well, what do elections have to do with immigration? Well, an awfully big part of this, requiring proof of citizenship, requiring photo IDs, these are tools not merely to make it harder for people to vote, but also to make people who are qualified to vote, who've achieved citizenship, still a little scared about doing it. The more intimidation, the more erection of barriers. So you read through the model legislation, you see, quote unquote, the genius of their strategy. It is to, you know, not only erect the barriers, but to establish the intimidation. So you've got that. That's one level. And remember, we've had voter ID bills similar to what ALEC has proposed, sponsored now in 33 states across the country, passed in at least six states so far, with many more coming on fast. And the interesting thing is heavy movement in battleground states, states where a large turnout in 2008 elected Barack Obama president. As we move toward the 2012 election, a full court press to make it tougher to generate those large turnouts. Another thing Alec doesn't like, same day registration, the opportunity for people to go to the polling place on election day because they've gotten excited in the last stages of the process and said, I want to go vote. Alec's putting barriers to that. Another thing that Alec is obsessed with is dialing down the power of citizens to initiate legislation directly. That's through local initiatives and referendums. You've covered it, Sam. Across this country, we've had living wage laws put on the ballot in our communities. We've had proposals to extend sick benefits and sick leave to workers put on the ballot. And these things pass with overwhelming margins, 60, 70, 80% of the people voting in favor of them. So what's Alec's solution? To make it tougher to do initiatives. They have all kinds of resolutions, all kinds of proposals to limit the ability of citizens to do that, to require that there be, quote-unquote, super majorities for legislation, citizen-generated legislation that involves fiscal issues. So all across the board, trying to make it harder for citizens to do democracy, harder for citizens to vote. But there's one group of political players that they want to make it easy for. Alec has sponsored model resolutions, put together model legislation, cheering on Citizens United, the Citizens United ruling. And it is, if you want to see something that's writ large across all of their documentation, it is their passionate belief that money should not be controlled in any way in our political process. So while voters are controlled, while citizens are controlled, money, especially corporate money, is free to flow as the corporate CEOs would choose. And here's the fascinating thing, Sam. They're so in bed with the corporate CEOs that they actually oppose shareholder rights.
Right.
They oppose efforts by shareholders to say that corporations shouldn't spend money in politics.
You know, it's Paul Weyrich, who founded this group, was famous for saying that he doesn't want everybody to vote, that he knows that conservative leverage goes up the less turnout is in general. And he's managed to, to finally figure out a mechanism in which to get these laws generated and then ultimately passed. We just got a minute here, but do we have anything on the left that is even remotely like this?
Well, that's, you know, Sam, every interview I've done on this, people have asked me that exact question. And by the fact of your question, you know the answer. Because, Sam,
right,
you've covered progressive politics better than just about anybody over the last, you know, several decades. And so you know full well. While we have wonderful groups that have done great work, groups like the Progressive States Network, groups like the Coalition of Environmental Legislators, the truth of the matter is that we simply do not have the, you know, anything near the infrastructure in place. And we've started about it, not to recreate Alec and its abuses, but rather to get focused much more intensely on state politics, on local politics, not just to be obsessed with the presidential election, but to recognize that down ballot is often where the real choice is. We've got to talk about what Alec's doing, and we have to challenge it electorally and in all sorts of other political ways so that we know that our democracy works for us, not for distant corporations.
John Nichols of The Nation magazine, thanks so much for joining us, folks. Head to thenation.com. You can read these pieces on Alec, and certainly stop by alecexposed.org. You can actually start to dig into these documents yourself. John, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sam. I'm so glad you're focusing on this.
All right, we got to take a break, folks. When we come back, we'll talk a couple of stories. And then in just another 5 minutes, we will talk specifically about what Alec suggests in terms of undermining public education. We'll be right back after this. Folks, this is breaking. I admitted to a meter maid that I was a Russian prostitute, and all she did was give me a ticket because the meter had expired on my car, and then she walked away! more as this develops. So Rupert Murdoch in big trouble, folks. Big trouble. And I don't think this is going to go away. And hopefully there's going to be more and more investigation on this side of the pond, as it were. We know the FBI is looking into News Corp practices here in the United States. New York Times reports top police official resigned on Sunday, just hours after Rebecca Brooks, the former chief executive of Murdoch's News International, was arrested on suspicion of illegally intercepting phone calls and bribing the police. The official Sir Paul Stevenson, commissioner of the Metropolitan Police Service, commonly known as the Met or Scotland Yard, Jesus, stepped down because the ongoing speculation, blah, 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 blah. He had no idea that Neil Wallace, a former News of the World deputy editor who had become public relations consultant for the police after leaving the paper, was himself suspected of phone hacking. Wallace was arrested last Thursday. My, my, cheerio. That's a pip, isn't it? 10, I think, executives have now resigned from News Corp. I speculated on Friday that by the time this was done, the troika of Fox and Friends will be running the entire company. And Rebecca Brooks has will be appearing before the Committee on Phone Hacking this week. There was some speculation that because of her arrest, she would avoid testifying in front of Parliament. That does not look to be the case. Britain's Channel 4 News is reporting that the UK's Serious Fraud Office, not so serious fraud is okay, but we have a serious fraud office, which is charged with investigating and prosecuting large and complex fraud cases, has begun a preliminary investigation into News International, the parent company of News Corp's UK newspapers. And David Carr in the New York Times writes today, I guess yesterday, that this is not the first sticky wicket that the British have News Corp has found itself in this very country here. I am talking, of course, of the colonies. America! Specifically in the case of News America Marketing, News Corp's obscure but profitable in-store and newspaper insert marketing business. The News Corporation has paid out over $650 million to make embarrassing charges of corporate espionage go away. 10 people have been arrested. Excuse me, not resigned. 10 people have been arrested because of these News Corp dealings, I guess one should call it, down and dirty. It paid out $1.6 million in 2009 to settle claims related to this scandal here, specifically dealing with the hacking into the voicemail of famous people, of a woman, of a girl who had been killed. In 2009, there was a federal case in New Jersey brought by a company called Floor Graphics. What was it for? Accusing News America, a News Corp subsidiary, of hacking into Floor Graphics' password-protected computer system. But they would only use that technology in Britain and for the news marketing division in this country. They would never use it for, let's say, Roger Ailes calling News Corp security and trying to spy on one of his employees at a unrelated newspaper up in Putnam County. That would never happen. Or News Corp would never, let's say, train maybe some guys from a group that would go around and videotape people dressed as prostitutes. But in this case, they would try and hack into a phone service of a U.S. senator. That would never happen. That completely, completely stretches the imagination beyond belief. I wonder if when Project Veritas solicits money for their shittily produced videos of a guy in a bad wig saying to a Medicare official, I do a lot of bad things. And they say, okay, let me just deal with your Medicare application. But wait a second! My daughter's a prostitute! I drive a sports car! I'm from Russia! I sell drugs! And they say, well, okay, can we do your Medicare application, please? It's so strange that people who work in governmental agencies who are not involved in law enforcement don't actually practice law enforcement. It's weird. It's weird. Anyways, the complaint summed up the ethos of News America nicely, saying that it had illegally accessed plaintiff's computer system and obtained proprietary information, disseminated false, misleading, and malicious information about the plaintiff. More is that. We continue. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Julie Underwood, who has written a piece on Alec's attempts at destroying public education. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Julie Underwood. She is the dean of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Education. She has written a piece in The Nation magazine examining part of this Alec document dump, specifically how it relates to the agenda, which we've all seen in the guise of so-called school reform in attacking our public education system. Welcome to the program, Julie.
Thanks for having me.
So, Julie, tell me, what in ALEC, what legislation have they generated, drawn up to attack public education?
Well, we see in the data dump, and then when you look at various states that have enacted school choice legislation, you see ALEC fingerprints all over it. And you can tell that one of their long-standing agenda items has been to privatize public schools. That, along with, of course, doing as much damage to the teachers' union as possible. So those are two trends that we see clearly.
And so it's basically privatization and destruction of teachers' unions. The destruction of unions, of course, is a big theme throughout all of the ALEC legislation. But tell us how they go about, I mean, what are the steps that they take to attempt to privatize this, and why would they want to privatize it?
Well, I think philosophically one of the things, if you want to start there, philosophically I think one of the reasons for privatization certainly is it's just in the capitalistic model, or the model of corporate democracy rather than individual democracy or citizen democracy. And what you see is an attempt to move students into private schools, and it gives parents the ability to actually shift their private decisions onto public tax rolls, so that the public can pay for those private decisions, and it allows parents to move their children to specialty schools where they don't have to interact with children who aren't like them.
Right.
I found an interesting piece that we didn't put in the, it wasn't put in its entirety in the Nation piece. Do you have a, if I could just read
Please.
It to you? So it's from 1985. It's a document that I found. And it's really, you know, they're one of the original manifestos for school reform from ALEC. And it says, public schools compensate for economic disadvantages in family backgrounds and overcome centuries-old prejudices, confer equality on youngsters with physical or mental handicaps, and transmit our common culture while preserving each of its diverse elements. Public schools meet all of the needs of all of the people without pleasing anyone. And so in response, they pushed for this educational freedom and quality through privatization, which is vouchers, charters, unregulated private school charters.
That's such a stunning quote because I was like, yes, that is what's so great about public education.
Exactly. That is, you know, even transmitting our common culture while preserving each of its diverse elements. Yes, that's what we want public schools to do. But then they say, of course, you know, public schools meet all of the needs of all of the children, but they don't meet individual needs of individual children that allow us to pull our children out of the public sphere.
So in other words, there is a fundamental problem in the democratic nature of public education that they're espousing here. They're basically saying, we don't want to subsidize the improvement of society at large. It is our explicit agenda to essentially leave the poor, leave the those who have any type of special needs, leave them to fend for themselves, and we would like to be able to excel on our own, but let's do it on the public dime.
Yeah, exactly. We want to make sure our own children excel, and we want to do that on the public dime. So it's rejecting the social contract that American public education actually is, because the contract is we all pool our money and we all take care of everybody's children so that everybody can do better. So that we can, you know, can improve the fabric of society. And this is a fundamental rejection of that.
Julie, would you do me a favor? Will you read that quote again? It is the most stunning
quote
I think I have ever heard.
I
mean, I'm completely blown away because this is the fundamental admission of school reform is not about trying to find the best way to educate all of our children.
It is not about
trying to find the cheapest or the least expensive way of doing this efficiently. It is fundamentally about an anti-democratic nature about education. Please read it again.
Okay, and it comes from a document called the Education Sourcebook. It's an ALEC document, and it's from 1985. Public schools compensate for economic disadvantages in family backgrounds and overcome centuries-old prejudices, confer equality on youngsters with physical or mental handicaps, and transmit our common culture while preserving its diverse elements. Public schools meet all of the needs of all of the people without pleasing anyone. In response, they offer, you know, this privatization to, quote, foster educational freedom and quality.
It's stunning.
Isn't it stunning? To me, it's the smoking gun.
It really is, because you know, I mean, there are so many people out there, particularly who self-identify as being left of center, who perceive this education reform movement as simply about efficiency and about getting the best results, and they miss the central point that it's about getting the best results for a very narrow group of people.
Or it's about allowing people to resegregate our public schools, to resegregate our society, and doing it on the public dollar. In addition, we really look at the data involved in choice or vouchers. I hate for people to take good language. So, you know, these are vouchers. This is not about choice. This is about vouchers and privatization. So if you look at the data on vouchers, those schools aren't that much better. They don't get better results. And so to say that it's about efficiency or improving education is really is really hard to swallow.
And tell me, what have you found in ALEC that legislative prescriptions have you found in ALEC that have been adopted in by the school reform movement? The most prominent examples.
Well, the most prominent ones, of course, are the voucher programs. And so, you know, starting in 1985, they were pushing for vouchers. In 1990, Wisconsin adopted vouchers. And if I've got a 2007 document that actually has a state prescription, a state-by-state prescription of how you can enact vouchers in unregulated charter schools in your state. These days, they kind of have a voucher of every flavor. So there are special education vouchers. There are vouchers for children of veterans. There are vouchers for children who are autistic. There are vouchers for children who are in foster care. There are vouchers for children who with other special needs. So you see this, you know, a voucher of every flavor, which is really clear ALEC agenda.
Wow, stunning. And what's the next biggest, would you say, prescription that that has come out of ALEC that we should keep our eyes open?
Well, to me, the next biggest prescription is really in a 2010 document where they talk about, you know, their four big goals are to continue privatization, to actually work towards, as they say, market factors into the teaching profession. And that's a lot of that is really deregulating the certification of teachers so that anyone without any training whatsoever can come in and teach in public schools, if there are public schools left. Increase student testing and reporting, so that's the No Child Left Behind kind of agenda, which they push very hard. And then the last one is also kind of shocking, and that's really to chip away at the local school districts and school boards and really, you know, if you want to take it a step further, to eliminate local school districts and school boards, to control schools school by school. And if you believe in this privatization model, and if you give a certain number of dollars to every child, regardless of their education needs, then you can just take that little voucher to any school, and you won't need local school boards. You won't need local school districts. That really is a shocking dismantlement of the public schools.
So, and those middle two, the certification and the idea of punishing schools that don't test as well, those are basically two more elements in a way to just continue to attack the quality of public education, so that the idea that you and simultaneously setting up the voucher system and the lack of even sort of general local control of schools is basically a 1-2 punch. You continue to make...
It may be a 1-2-3 punch, because so you starve the school district by taking away funds and making government smaller, as they say. You know, you starve the school district. You push people into schools and teaching positions who are not qualified. You take away the children that are easiest to educate with the most active parents. And then you blame the schools for the results. So in my mind, it's a 1-2-3 punch, which really is designed to kill public schools.
Well, Julie Underwood, I thank you so much for joining us. And I'd love to talk to you about education in general in the future. Appreciate the work you're doing here on this, ALEC. And please, if you end up publishing anything with that quote in it, please let us know. I think you're absolutely right. It's completely the smoking gun.
It's the smoking gun. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Julie Underwood, Dean of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Education. Folks, that's our show for today. If you can become a member, we definitely, frankly, desperately need your membership. You can join at majority.fm. Not only will you keep this show going for the content that you've just heard, but you'd be able to join me in the post show as I talk about more stories. You will be the sine qua non of most learned in of politics in your very circles, folks. and you may pick up some Latin. You can also support the show by buying junk through our Amazon link and buying your coffee, tea, and chocolate at justcoffee.coop. Use the coupon code MAJORITY at 10% off. Join me, will you, now in the post show. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can call us at 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. Be right back after this.